Greetings, warriors, veterans, and America-loving citizens from sea to shining sea. Welcome to Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Hoo-ah! The Frontlines of Freedom team really appreciates you joining us this fine day in America. We are proud Americans. Well, here's what we have for you this hour. We're going to start by talking about people in the military preparing for their job after they discharge. Then we'll discuss the Battle of the Month with General Chris Petty, and we'll review last weekend's Service Academy football games, and of course, we'll conclude with our military history and our self-defense report. So it's a pleasure to introduce Navy vet Steve Underwriter. Steve's got an MBA and runs his own business, and he's seen service people leave active duty without a plan. And he's got some insights that he can share, and I'm delighted that he can join us. Welcome to the show, Steve, or am I supposed to say welcome aboard?
Welcome aboard. That's fine. Thank you, Danny, for having me on your show.
Steve, start by telling us about your time in the Navy. When and why did you join? What'd you do?
I always knew I was going to serve my country. And so when I had the opportunity, after I graduated from college, I saw the opportunity to join the Navy. And I went ahead and did that. Wanted to get into naval aviation, which I did. Spent 21 years flying the EA-6B electronic attack prowler aircraft on and off carriers. So enjoyed my time in the Navy. Had a great time.
Steve, I got to tell you, I'm an Army Ranger. I did a lot of stuff. The thought of regularly trying to land an airplane on an aircraft carrier at sea, that's got to be exciting. Is that a fair statement? That scares the heck out of me.
Oh, that's a fair statement. I think you wind up breathing quite heavy, but the night winds are even more fun.
I'll let you enjoy those. I never will if I have a choice, and I think I'm safe now. Okay. What did you do when you got out, and were you planning it all the time, or did you just stumble into it?
I made a rash decision to get out. So I put in my papers to retire when I was thought that I wanted to move on. And that surprised me that I did that. And then next thing I realized that I really didn't know what I was going to do. So now I had to hunt for jobs. So that was one thing I did wrong.
Okay. And I suspect that you are not alone in that. You probably know and have met a lot of other people who did about the same thing.
Yes, I've seen both sides. I've seen somebody plan their last 3 years of active duty, put themselves in a position to be in the job market that they wanted to pursue. But more often than not, it's usually within, they make a decision, and then the next thing, they're going to retire within, 6 to 9 months. And that's for primarily the careerist that's doing that.
Yep. And I know a bunch of, I call them kids, I'm in my 80s, who wanted to be a mechanic. They joined the military to be a mechanic, and they got out of the military and were mechanics. There's that group of people, but the most of the rest of us really don't know where we're going, though some of us may have a vision that others don't have. Is that a fair statement?
That's a fair statement. You know, in my case, and I'll use myself as an example because I'm a bad example, is that once I did find employment, I looked at it as just a temporary position until I could figure out what I was going to do. And 20 years later, I figured that out. But locking yourself into something that you maybe not really like to do and you get comfortable in, it's an opportunity to pursue your dreams. You've got a lot of background in the military that you can go in and do a lot of other things.
So what we're talking about here is you have to transition into the next phase of your journey, and you can do it foolishly or logically. Is that a fair statement?
That's a fair statement. You can do that with some idea of what you want to do, but there's a lot of things that are going to be new to you. In the military, you've had somebody taking care of your career. You knew where you were going, at least rank-wise, and you had opportunities to grow, and you focused on your military career. Now you're going to go into the civilian world, and you may not have anybody really looking out for you other than you, and the terminology is all different. You're probably used to all the military terminology, moving into the civilian world and the terminology there, and a whole new set of financial decisions you're going to have to make, those regarding your benefits that you've earned in the military, and what you're going to do in terms of financial planning if you have kids and so forth, how to include all that into the future, because now you have different retirement plans. Taxation is a big issue. You're going to no longer have your SGLI, so you're going to need to think of insurance. You're going to think of a variety of other things. Your survivor benefits plan, do you want to do that, or is there other options? So it's a huge jump, a lot of stuff coming at you very quickly.
This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. We're talking with Navy vet Steve Underwriter about that step from being in the military to being one of those civilian people that are so many of them out there. You know, God must love civilians. He made so many of them. Okay, so when should you start that planning for your departing the military? What's the smart time for that?
The smart time is any time, really. I've had one person say that the day you join the military is the day you should start planning your exit, because everybody's going to leave. But, you know, if you have time to think about it, you know where you want to go. I'd probably start a couple of years before, particularly if you need to get some training done or get some certifications done before you want to go out. Those are some things you can consider. Otherwise, it's never too late to plan, even if you just put in your papers or even if you've just gotten out. It's time to start planning, or all of a sudden, holy cow, I have all this stuff here. And so if you need to start, it's any time, really.
But ideally, the sooner the better, huh?
Ideally, sooner the better. And that way, it makes it much smoother, less stressful as you make that transition.
You know, there's so much we could talk about, but how do you, your company is Freedom Financial Planning Solutions. How do you assist people that are going through something like that?
Well, we take a look, and first thing I want to know is I want to know about you and your family. What are your thoughts? I want to know a little bit about your journey. Understanding where you're coming from and what your desires are and where you're going to go. So most of my stuff is really just at the beginning, learning about you and understanding you. You know, I've been there, and so I'm familiar with the military system, but I've now been in the civilian world for quite some time, having been an employee and started my own business as well. So really finding out about you is probably the most important thing. And then we take it from there and we lay out what are the financial issues that you're going to have to deal with? And we start coming up with a plan of where you can go to find out more information or tie you in with some other people, and we can help lay out a good financial solid plan for you.
You know, that's logical, because while you're in the military, if you're going to move somewhere, the military pays for that. Whatever it is, the military is funding you doing whatever you're doing, whether you like it or not. All of a sudden, that's not there anymore, and it's your responsibility. And while I saw this coming, it was still a shock to me. Is that normal?
Yes, that is normal. I'll tell you just, you know, one example is if you're getting a housing allowance, you know, and you say your housing allowance is $2,500, and all of a sudden you're out, that's tax-free money. Now you're out. That same housing, $2,500, if you're in a 22% tax bracket, it's going to cost you 22% more. And so, you know, there's a lot of things that you have in the military that are tax-free that now you're going to have to plan from a tax perspective, as well as whether or not you're retiring, whether or not the state that you're in or going to, taxes military retirement. It's different in every state. So that's why I say taxation is usually one of the biggest surprises, because now you're going to be, you have your retirement income, and now you're going to have a new income. So it's can be huge in that area.
I know that. I don't have to believe it. I've experienced that. Okay. How can listeners touch base with you if they'd like some more information from you? We want to touch base with you. How do they do that?
You can go to my website, which is freedomfpsolutions.com. That's freedomfpsolutions.com. You can also call me or text me at 616-427-1794. So, those are two ways you can get a hold of me, text me or go to my website. You can contact me through that. You can also find me on LinkedIn as Steve Underwriter on LinkedIn, and look my profile there.
And if you forget that, email me, Denny, at frontlinesoffreedom.com. I know how to get Steve. Steve, thank you. Thanks for taking time to join us today. Thank you for your service to our nation, and thank you for what you're doing now for fellow veterans as well as non-veterans. I appreciate you, man.
Okay, thank you, Denny, for having me on board.
Well said, bro. Coming up next on Frontlines of Freedom, we'll discuss the battle of the month. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. It's time to run hard now. Run for a couple of miles. Do this while thinking patriotic thoughts. I'll be right back. Troops America has changed, and if you're like me, you'd defend yourself and your family if necessary. But as noble as this is, experts recommend never speaking to the police without an attorney, even if you're the victim. That's why I'm a member of U.S. Law Shield. the very best self-defense insurance that I've found. They provide unlimited attorney coverage for civil, criminal, appeal, and retrial at a very affordable price. Check uslawshield.com and use the code FRONTLINES. That's uslawshield.com.
We were instrumental in passing the VA Mission Act, so more veterans could have options and freedom in their health care. We're leading the charge to end America's endless wars, bringing thousands of troops home and stopping trillions of dollars from being wasted. Our key to success? You. We bring your voice to our nation's leaders so we can all have a better future. We are Concerned Veterans for America, the voice of veterans for freedom and prosperity. Visit cv4a.org to learn more and join the movement.
Do you have a story inside you yearning to come out? As a self-published author, you are free to creatively distribute your book online or using your own professional connections. White Feather Press will publish your manuscript and set up online distribution, allowing the author to retain all copyright and distribution rights as well as all profits. Check out White Feather Press at publishyourdream.com. White Feather Press, reaffirming faith in God, family, and country. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Thanks for joining us today on Frontlines of Freedom. And it's time for the Battle of the Month with General Chris Petty. I think I know a lot about our nation's military history, but Chris is miles ahead of me. I learn every time we talk. It's fun. So thanks for being on the team, Chris. Welcome aboard.
Always a pleasure, Denny. Thanks for having me.
Chris, give us a quick review of your time in Mother Army.
Okay. I graduated West Point in 87. So, you know, I'm still a young buck, unlike
you. Yep, you are.
So I branched aviation, did a lot of fun, interesting stuff. And basically, fast forward to the highlights are a deployment to Iraq as a battalion commander during the surge. That unit did a lot of incredible things. So that kind of created some opportunity for me. So when I got back, I was given a brigade command of a composite brigade of special forces and infantry and aviation and all kinds of weird stuff. And then I, lo and behold, got promoted to general officer before I knew it. And they sent me to Bosnia. So I got to see interesting NATO operations. And I got to then go to the Pentagon and work on the Army staff and see how the Army thinks and acts and in that bureaucracy. And then I finished out at NORTHCOM as a deputy director of operations. So I got to see how that combatant command stuff works too. So it was really rewarding and interesting and good stuff. So that's it in a nutshell.
And just for the record, NORTHCOM is the combatant command that basically is responsible for protecting North America, right?
That's right. I mean, that's probably the easiest summary. It does support civil authorities and emergency response as requested by the Secretary of Homeland Security and et cetera, but mostly it's a combatant command to defend America, yes.
Okay. Our battle for this month is Kings Mountain, which I do know was a battle fought during the Revolutionary War. Take us there, bro.
Yeah, Kings Mountain is, you know, I like to start with why should we know this battle? Because not a lot of people know this. So this happened 7 October 1780. So I'll put you in the time frame, 7 October 1780, in the Southern Theater of the Revolutionary War. Some people don't realize the extent of the Southern Theater during the Revolutionary War, but for your listeners who watched the Mel Gibson movie, The Patriot, that kind of puts you in the Southern Theater of the Revolutionary War, just to give you some reference. So this is a special category. This is, I would call this the category of least known yet most pivotal battles in U.S. history. So why do I say that? I'll get to that. But it really was a turning point battle in the Revolution and very unique in that this is one of the only battles where Americans fought on both sides, just strictly Americans versus Americans, with one Brit in command of the Loyalist militia on the British side. But other than that, it was Americans fighting Americans. And finally, it reaffirmed the strength of the American militia if used properly. And I say that importantly as a even as a National Guard guy, who with great respect for the early militia tradition, if used correctly, the militia is really powerful here. So that's why we should know the battle.
Well, it certainly is what you just said. And realizing an awful lot of Americans don't realize that there were an awful lot of Americans fighting for the British during the Revolutionary War. So that's part of this. This is cool. Keep going, Chris.
Yeah. So I'll kind of summarize the high points of the battle. So set the stage here. By 1779, the Northern Theater had become kind of a stalemate. So Washington's army had not only survived, But with the Battle of Saratoga, France had entered the war, so things were not looking great up north, and you could definitely call it a stalemate. So Clinton, Sir Henry Clinton, who was the commander for the Brits in North America, replaced General Howe. He looked for a different strategy, and he thought, if I can seize the Carolinas, I can cut the rebellion in two, I can isolate Virginia, and I can stem the flow of rebel supplies to the northern colonies. So he's trying to get out of the stalemate in the north. He moves south. He actually takes I think it was 8,000 or 9,000 strong army from New York to Charleston in December of 79. He takes over Charleston by May of 80. And by 5 June, everything's good. He's sailing back to New York. He leaves Major General Lord Cornwallis in charge. And Cornwallis gets off to a promising start. So he basically destroys the Continental Army in the South at the Battle of Camden. But he's got this nagging problem. The militias keep attacking his posts and his patrols. So he's got to do something about that problem.
And he did too, didn't he?
Yeah. Yes, he did. So he sends out Bannister Tarleton, who is also a famous character in history, kind of the British bad guy dragoon. And he sends out this officer named Ferguson, Major Patrick Ferguson, who's one of the stars of the show here. So Ferguson is the Brit. His job is to recruit loyalists and train them and now go out on Cornwallis's large left flank as he wants to move north to protect that flank, raise loyalists and subdue the militias. So this is where the story gets interesting. Ferguson sends a message over the Blue Ridge Mountains to the what's called the Overmountain Men. Now, some of your listeners have heard of the Overmountain Men. And his message said this: if they do not desist from their opposition to British arms, he would march his army over the mountains, hang their leaders, and lay their country to waste with fire and sword.
That should get people's attention.
Yes, this fired up the Overmountain Men, a very fierce, strong, independent people behind the Blue Ridge Mountains, and it was too much for them to bear. So they rallied together, all these little militias in these counties. They chased down Ferguson, and they caught up to him at the Battle of Kings Mountain.
And let me guess, the good guys won.
The good guys won. It was a fierce battle. It only lasted an hour, but the militias destroyed Ferguson. They killed Ferguson. They destroyed his loyalist army. And the defeat, so it wasn't just the tactical defeat of a loyalist army. It was about 1,000 men against 1,000 men. But the defeat really spooked the countryside. So loyalist support dried up quickly. And with this is why it's a turning point. Because loyalist support dried up so quickly, Cornwallis had to change his entire strategy because he couldn't rely on recruiting manpower to move up north through the Carolinas and into Virginia. So it changed the whole war. In fact, General Clinton referred to Kings Mountain as the first link of a chain of evils that ended in the total loss of America.
That's a pretty accurate statement, isn't it?
Yeah. So it's really this small battle. It's not very well known or understood. And it really is one of those little pivotal battles in American history that changed the war. And this led directly, as Clinton said, this first link of a chain of evils, it's led to Cornwallis' surrender at Yorktown a year later. So it's really a sort of a direct causal link. So fascinating story. There's lots of great subplots and militias adapting their tactics on the fly. Ferguson failing to prepare because he was cocky and a little bit arrogant. So there's lots of nice little subplots in this battle too, but it's a fascinating story.
You know, throughout history, particularly in war, when a powerful country threatens somebody else and or, well, like when the Germans started bombing Britain, they did it with the intention of crushing the morale, but in fact, it turned the other way. That's the same thing that happened here, isn't it?
Exactly. Exactly. It's a great point. This, you know, these kind of arrogant, powerful statements, you know, in this case, the fire and sword proclamation, as it's called. I mean, if it wasn't for Major Ferguson's fire and sword proclamation, the entire war might have changed. I mean, it really directly led to the militias pursuing Ferguson, killing him, destroying his little army, and changing Cornwallis' strategy.
Amen. Chris, how can listeners plug into you and learn more about Nation's Battles?
Well, I, you know, if you like summaries like this with maps and graphics and, you know, beautiful layouts and all that, I've got them at battledigest.com. So just go to battledigest.com. Each of these battles is only $5.99. So, I mean, it's just a bargain. And I mail them straight to you. And they're just the most fantastic summaries. So battledigest.com. And as you know, Denny, I published my first book, which is called 12 Battles Every American Should Know. It's literally the number 12. So if you go to Amazon or on my website, you can get it and I can sign it for you. But go to, just search 12 Battles Every American Should Know, or just go to battledigest.com and learn more.
I can say amen to the book and to the website. Amen. Chris, thank you. Thanks for joining us today. Thanks for being part of the Frontlines of Freedom team. Thank you for your service to our nation. I'm glad we're friends.
Thanks, Denny. Me too.
Coming up next on Frontlines of Freedom, we'll review last weekend's Service Academy football games, and we'll open our weekly mailbag. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. Troops, it's time for one-arm push-ups. Just do a dozen with each arm, then take a break or stay in the area. I'll be right back.
Fresh, flash, frozen, from the American farmer every time. PatriotFoods.com, hit the Shop Now button. You're supporting a veteran family in need every time you shop. Look at us online, see how we give back. For the servicemen and women of this great country, we are fighting for the American farmer. PatriotFoods.com, promo code FREEDOM, 10% off today, folks. Shop now.
This is Colonel Denny Gillum. I buy Patriot Foods. It's great. PatriotFoods.com, promo code FREEDOM. Welcome back to Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Troops, I really do welcome your comments and questions. Contact me through frontlinesoffreedom.com or comment on Facebook. And it is football season, and it's time for football co-host Quentin Roberts and me to review last weekend's Service Academy football games. Welcome aboard, Quentin. It was an interesting week, wasn't it?
Oh, it was another great week of college football and Service Academy football. Not as victorious with all three as we would have liked, but nonetheless, they are all in the heart of their schedules.
It is. And one thing you got to do, you got to stay tuned in, because whatever you think might happen might not be what's happening.
That's very true. Very well said.
And I was hoping Army would do good. Army didn't do well at all with Wake Forest. It lost pretty big, 45-10, I think.
Yes, Denny, it was a tough day for the Black Knights of West Point as they dropped to 1-4 on the season to a number 15 ranked Wake Forest team that moved to 5-1 on the season in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. The Black Knights were actually led by Isaiah Austin, who caught 7 passes for 127 yards and a touchdown, while Markel Broughton led the Army defense with 10 tackles. They drove into the red zone on their opening possession, highlighted by a 47-yard pass from Tyheer Tyler to Tyrell Robinson. But it was that turnover bug that bit them as the Black Knights would lose a fumble deep in the Demon Deacons territory. And the Deacons were able to put together a 93-yard drive and go ahead 7-0, a lead that would extend to 21-0 in the second quarter. And in the third quarter, unfortunately, the onslaught just continued. Wake Forest poured it on. It wasn't until the fourth quarter where Army was able to get on the board, bring the score to 38-7, and eventually falling 45-10. You know, one thing I'll point out, as I always do when you look at the tail of the tape, Army, though, gained 407 yards, 182 through the air, 225 on the ground, but they gave up 488, which was 267 through the air, 221, a pretty balanced attack by Wake Forest. You know, again, Wake Forest has got a good program going right now, and they were just too much for the Black Knights.
Yep, it hurt, but it's truth. And much to everybody's surprise, Air Force did not beat Utah State. They weren't murdered, but I was expecting a win for Air Force.
Well, Denny, you know, last year they lost a real thriller, 48-45. Air Force lost that game anyway to Utah State. Utah State is one of those teams that puts up a lot of points. and is always a threat. When you throw the ball a lot, you can be effective. You really stress Air Force quite a bit. In this case, Air Force fell to 4-2. Utah moved to 2-4, which is another reason we thought Air Force would prevail, as Utah State prevailed 34-27 in Utah. Air Force was just unable to maintain a 14-13 lead as the Aggies outscored the Falcons 21-13 in the second half. Senior running back Brad Roberts led the Falcons with 136 yards rushing on 29 carries, and Air Force was able to put up 264 yards on the ground, still far below that 400-yard average. But it moved into the fourth quarter, and it was a very tight game as Air Force was up 24-20 when Utah State put together a 75-yard scoring drive and hit a 34-yard pass for the touchdown to go up 27-24. Air Force was driving, and the turnover bug struck again. You know, Air Force lost the turnover battle 2-1. They broke a 20-yard run as the running back was going. A defender came and just punched that ball out. And Utah State was able to recover. They scored, went up 34-24, and the game was all but over at that time. So tough loss for Coach Calhoun and the Falcons.
It was indeed. This is Colonel Denny Gilliam on Front Lines of Freedom. We're talking football with Quentin Roberts. And wow, did Navy come out. I mean, 53-21. I'm proud of those boys.
Woo! Cue up anchors away as Navy routed Tulsa 53-21 and improved to 2-1 in the American Athletic Conference. It was sophomore fullback Daba Fafana who rushed for a career high 159 yards and 3 touchdowns. The defense forced 4 turnovers as the midshipmen rolled to a 53-21 rout of Tulsa at Navy Marine Corps Memorial Stadium. Coach Ken Niumatalolo said, "I am just proud of our young men to bounce back like that after a devastating loss. We showed a lot of grit and resolve because that's a good football team we just beat." So the Navy defense set the tone on the first drive of the game, forcing a Tulsa 3-and-out. Navy was able to move down and take a 3-0 lead in the first quarter. Then they forced another punt, and wide receiver Nathan Kent electrified the Navy Marine Corps Stadium crowd by taking a reverse 70 yards for a touchdown on his first career play. Not the first time he carried the ball. This is his first play. And he goes 70 yards. So what we see is a theme that Coach Niumatalolo is really looking at other players and giving them the opportunity to show what they can do. And they are not disappointing. So, you know, Navy was able to roll at halftime. They were up 36-14. They continued just applying the pressure, adding 10 points in the third quarter. And finally, capping off the scoring with 3 minutes and 52 seconds left to go in the game with a Vincent Terrell 3-yard touchdown run to win it 53-21.
Coast Guard lost big, 49-6. They're not doing that well.
Coast Guard is struggling this year, Denny. They did lose 49-6 to Springfield. The worst part, it was Parents Weekend. We've got to talk to those schedulers. They've got to learn when it's Parents Weekend, you have to make sure that the team wins. The Merchant Marine Academy, on the other hand, moved to 4-1 on the season with an impressive 19-7 victory over Norwich. Their next game will be against MIT, while Coast Guard's next game will be against Catholic. So stay tuned as we continue to take you through the Merchant Marine and Coast Guard Academy seasons as well.
Okay, this week, Army's versus Colgate. What should that look like?
Army-Colgate, I think it's a home game. You know, again, Army put up 400 yards against Wake Forest, so expect them to really roll against Colgate.
Okay, I'll vote for that. And Air Force is at UNLV.
They are, and that's going to be a tough one, Denny.
Oh, yeah.
UNLV is playing good football this year. And so Air Force being on the road, they were at Utah State. Now they're going to be at UNLV. And so, you know, they're going to have to bring their A game. They're going to have to take care of the football. And that ball security has been too lax this year. But UNLV is 4-2 on the year, and Air Force is going to have to play good football to get the victory.
And here's hoping they do. And finally, Navy will be at SMU. That should be interesting.
Yeah, that sure should be, Denny, as SMU is a very good team. In Dallas, which will be, of course, the home of Air Force Army in the first weekend in November. But the SMU Mustangs are really looking pretty strong this year. But Navy, I think, has found something. And so if they can continue playing good football, they should be able to go in and take down the Mustangs, who are just 2-3 overall.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Quentin. Thanks for your insights and being a part of the team. We'll be back at it next week.
Hey, looking forward to it, Denny.
Troops, if you're a veteran who's having trouble getting your disability approved by the VA, contact Barry Law. Reach them at PTSDlawyers.com. They're good people. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Next up, it's time for a weekly mailbag, then it's military history. You've reported for duty to Front Lines of Freedom. Stand tall, troops. Let's do some more push-ups, about 60 this time. And once your ranger ready, then stand at ease. Friends, there's not too many things I enjoy more than helping veterans and eating great beef jerky. Now I can do both. My good friends at Tango3.org and America's Best Beef Jerky use the highest quality beef to make the best jerky I've ever tasted. Trust me, I've eaten a lot. But that's not all. They give 100% of the profit to vetted veterans programs, mental health and suicide prevention. Go to americasbestbeefjerky.com and order now. And at checkout, check the Front Lines of Freedom promo code.
HealthVet.net is here to help all veterans, active military, and families. HealthVet.net is a national help center helping the military community with their everyday needs. Whether you need a realtor, an attorney, discounted services, or information on retirement benefits, financial resources, and much more, our vast network of hand-picked qualified service providers are waiting to help you. With up-to-date military news and resources, you can find answers to all your needs at HealthVet.net. HealthVet.net. Never forget, never forgotten.
I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. This is the final formation for this week on Front Lines of Freedom. Okay, team, it's mailbag time. I welcome comments from you, our listeners. Do send your thoughts to me at denny@frontlinesoffreedom.com or on Facebook. Skip, what's the first comment?
Well, Navy vet Bob is glad to see the federal government openly and actively helping the state of Florida after the hurricane. That's how things are supposed to happen.
Bob, you're right. And things went very well this time.
And Navy wife Sue appreciated the discussion on getting our country food independent. This is something that doesn't get much, if any, attention, but it's really critical.
Sue, you're right on. Be sure your elected representatives know how you feel. Okay, now it's time for military history. Take us there, Skip. What's the first one?
On October 18, 1767, Charles Mason and Jeremiah Dixon completed their survey of the boundary between the colonies of Pennsylvania and Maryland, as well as areas that would eventually become the states of Delaware and West Virginia. The Penn and Calvert families had hired Mason and Dixon, English surveyors, to settle their dispute over the boundary between their two proprietary colonies, Pennsylvania and Maryland. The Mason-Dixon line also became the reference point between the North and the South in our Civil War.
It sure did. And on 17 October 1777, British general and playwright John Burgoyne surrendered 5,000 British and Hessian troops to American General Horatio Gates at Saratoga, New York.
Guess he was a better playwright than he was a general.
Yeah, you can't do everything well.
And October 19th, 1781, the British Army at Yorktown surrendered. As Washington's force reached Williamsburg on September 28th, they joined with the forces of General Lafayette, who had been shadowing Cornwallis. This movement was supported by the fleet of Rear Admiral Comte de Grasse, whose ships assumed a blockading position and defeated the reinforcing British fleet. In Yorktown, Cornwallis was expecting heavy reinforcements. The first major attack on two positions began after dark on 14 October. Cornwallis shifted 1,000 men and his wounded to Gloucester Point with the goal of transferring his army across the river and breaking out to the north. As the boats returned to Yorktown, they were scattered by a storm. Out of ammunition for his guns and unable to shift his army, Cornwallis decided to open negotiations with Washington. On October 17th, a single drummer mounted the British works and beat the long roll as a lieutenant waved a white flag. Cornwallis's about 7,000 men were taken prisoner. The final surrender documents were signed on October 19th. At noon, the French and American armies lined up to await the British surrender. 2 hours later, the British marched out with flags furled and their bands playing. The world turned upside down. The victory at Yorktown was the last major engagement of the American Revolution and effectively ended the conflict in the Americans' favor.
That was quite a battle. And on 18 October 1942, during World War II, Vice Admiral William Halsey replaced Vice Admiral Robert Gormley as Commander South Pacific. The man nicknamed Bull by the press began his military career as a destroyer commander during World War I. Halsey was made a captain at the age of 53, earned his naval aviator's wings, and was promoted to vice admiral in 1940. But it was the bombing of Pearl Harbor that marked his future for him. Halsey had his carrier task force out on maneuvers when Pearl Harbor was attacked. So his was one of the few functioning battle groups left after the destruction of so much of the American fleet, placing him in the position of making the unpredictable and aggressive strategic decisions for which he would become renowned.
He's one of my favorites, Colonel. Like that guy.
He's good.
And on October 20th, 1944, after advancing island by island across the Pacific Ocean, General Douglas MacArthur waded ashore onto the Philippine island of Leyte, fulfilling his promise to return to the area he was ordered to leave in 1942.
And on 19 October 1965, North Vietnamese troops launched a major assault on U.S. and South Vietnamese Special Forces camp at Plai Mae in the Central Highlands, 215 miles north of Saigon. During a week of savage fighting, defenders of the besieged outpost, manned by 12 U.S. Green Berets, 400 Mountain Yard tribesmen, and a handful of South Vietnamese guerrilla specialists, repelled repeated Viet Cong attacks. The tide of the battle turned finally with the arrival of several hundred South Vietnamese reinforcements and numerous Allied airstrikes. With the camp secure, General William Westmoreland, the senior U.S. military commander in Saigon, decided to seize the advantage and sent in the 1st Cavalry Division, Air Mobile, to, quote, find, fix, and defeat the enemy forces that had threatened Plai Mae. His decision would result in November in the Battle of the Iadrang Valley, the war's bloodiest battle to date. The Vietnamese communists never won a major battle in the entire war. They lost every time, but they eventually won the war because the U.S. media started saying they were winning, and the protesters in the U.S. hit the streets.
And on 21 October 1967 in Washington, D.C., nearly 100,000 people gathered to protest the American war effort in Vietnam. Over 50,000 of the protesters marched to the Pentagon to ask for an end to the conflict. The protest was the most dramatic sign of waning support for President Lyndon Johnson's war in Vietnam. Polls taken in the summer of 1967 revealed that, for the first time, American support for the war had fallen below 50%. A group of hippies tried to exorcise the Pentagon. The brainchild of Abby Hoffman, the plan was for people to sing and chant until it levitated and turned orange, driving out the evil spirits and ending the Vietnam War. The Pentagon didn't move or change colors.
Are you sure, Skip?
Well, apparently they weren't taking enough drugs or it would have done that.
Okay. On 18 October 1989, the Iron Curtain nations of East Germany and Hungary took significant steps towards ending the communist domination of their countries and to replace it with a more democratic politics and free market economies. In Hungary, the Communist Party had disbanded on 7 October. This action was followed by the raising of the barbed wire fence that had for years separated Hungary from Austria. The destruction of the fence effectively marked the end of the Berlin Wall as an impediment to travel between East and West Germany, since East Germans could now simply travel to Hungary, enter Austria, and go from there to West Germany. Not surprisingly, the Berlin Wall came down shortly thereafter. And that's military history for today. And now it's time for the self-defense report. Take us there, Skip.
All of us here at Front Lines of Freedom want our listeners to get trained and get armed in that order. We fully support the right to keep and bear arms for all law-abiding families, and we encourage you to find out about the laws governing use of deadly force in your state and follow them to the letter. And of course, don't forget to follow the rules of safety and common sense whenever you're carrying a firearm to protect the ones you love. What's the story this week, Colonel?
Well, Dustin Brown, age 19, set out specifically to stab and kill as many children as possible as he set out for the Morton, Illinois Public Library. 16 children and a handful of their mothers found the only door to their library room blocked by a man who held hunting knives in each hand as he screamed, "I'm going to kill some people." James Vernon, an Army vet who'd been retired for almost 20 years, heard the threat and rushed in to stop him. James put himself between the children and the would-be killer long enough for the mothers to rush the kids to safety. James was attacked, and his wrists were slashed during the attack, but he never gave up. He managed to take away the man's knives and hold him down until police arrived. James survived, but needed surgery to repair his hands and his wrists.
Thanks, Colonel. I went online and did some more research on James Vernon, and I became even more impressed with this vet's performance. You see, James was trained for combat, but was a peacetime soldier. He'd been trained by the Army almost 50 years prior, but James never forgot his combat training. James served his country with distinction and then entered civilian life, where he worked in information technology for a full career before retiring. James wasn't a police officer or a Navy SEAL. In fact, he had no specialized martial arts training that one usually associates with taking on a younger and stronger attacker armed with two hunting knives. He was just a normal, average guy. But James Vernon had something that the would-be child killer didn't have. Let's go over it now. First, James had courage. No one would have blamed him for not intervening. The odds were stacked against him. He was in his 70s, and his assailant was in the prime of his life. But James had the courage and warrior mindset that had been fostered inside him 50 years ago in the Army, and it never went away. Warrior mindset is like that. Once you achieve it, you've got it for life. Second, James loved those children more than he loved his own life, so he attacked the younger, stronger, faster man out of compassion for the moms and their kids. A wise man once said, "Greater love has no one than this, than to lay down one's life for his friends." James loved the kids, and he saved them at risk of his own life. And third, James Vernon was a tough old bird. Even after being slashed on his wrist and hands, he didn't give up fighting. He kept going until the kids were safe, and until he'd overpowered the younger man, disarmed him, and then continued to hold him until the police arrived. Babe Ruth once said, "It's hard to beat a man who never gives up." James Vernon, Army veteran, is a modern-day hero who never gave up. And one thing this country needs right now more than ever is more people like James. When times get tough and hope wanes, we need heroes more than ever. Front Lines of Freedom salutes James Vernon from Illinois, and we thank him for his bravery and his heroism.
Well said, Skip. The movie of the month is Migrants. You can go to the Front Lines of Freedom website, go to the blog and get the link. You can watch it for free. We'll review it at the end of the month. I'd really appreciate getting your comments about it. Send them to me at denny@frontlinesoffreedom.com. Next week on Front Lines of Freedom, we'll interview a Ukrainian Army officer and the wife of a Ukrainian soldier presently fighting the Russians. Then Clyde Prestowitz will discuss China as our major threat. Next, we'll cover this weekend's Service Academy football games with Quentin Roberts. You know, our book, Front Lines of Freedom with 19 authors, has as its mission helping all patriotic Americans step up and help our nation return to our traditional values of serving, not being served, of being in shape physically, mentally, and morally, of being proud of our nation. You can purchase this book on frontlinesoffreedom.com. Please help us get this call to action book into the hands of all Americans. Probably be a good Christmas present.
Well, thank you, friends, for joining us for Front Lines of Freedom today and every week on this great station. Please check us out on Facebook and add your comments. And if you missed any part of this show, hey, all our shows are available on demand at frontlinesoffreedom.com. We especially thank our military listeners for serving our country with honor and dignity and for keeping us all safe. God bless you and your families as you serve.
I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Thank you, listeners all across America, for joining us in the foxholes on the Front Lines of Freedom. Stand tall, be proud Americans, and join me next week for military and veteran information that you will not get anywhere else on the Front Lines of Freedom. Dismissed.